Lights, camera, action.
I'm Nick Liebman, and welcome to Director's Cut, the show where we interview members of the MA directing class and explore their love of film and their inspirations. Today's guest is Tommy Tessier, and I'm very excited to get to know him better. Tommy, how you doing?
Doing fine, thanks. How are you?
No, thanks for coming in. I know it's a little bit late, but appreciate it.
It's cool. I told you, it forces me off just to, do
gym.
Other stuff,
No, I respect that. So for all you listeners out there, Tommy and I go back a little bit. We've done, I guess, one film together, and we've acted on one together.
Yeah, that's right, recently.
Yeah.
As an extra, We had some cool lines.
Yeah, we had some cool lines. You got to speak in French. I just got to look pretty on camera. It was a good time.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
But no, Tommy, I admire you because as a director, you tell people to say sound rolling, and sound is often forgotten on set, so I appreciate that from you.
Yeah. We were taught that a week before. We had a week or two before, we had this assistant director course thing, and it was just going over the process for a first AD, and he reminded us that to check for sound.
See, I wish you didn't say that, because now there's no excuse for the other films that I were on who didn't say sound.
Not everyone attended it as well,
So, Tommy, the whole point of the show is we just want to get to know you better, your love for film, directing, and whatnot. Ready to get started?
Yeah, sure.
All right, nice and easy one. So, where are you from?
France. Yes.
Where specifically?
In the suburbs of Paris.
Okay.
So, between, Paris and Disneyland, I'm in the middle, middle there. So, easy to go one way or the other.
And you've lived there your whole life?
All my life, yeah.
So you are 23 years of age, I'm guessing?
That's right.
From birth to 23, France.
That's right, yeah.
Very cool. I guess just coming to the UK, have you found any cultural differences? I guess it's your first time living abroad as well.
Yeah, although, because I visited England every year. Actually, I have family here in Bournemouth. I didn't really notice, it wasn't a drastic, change.
Okay.
I do, see that English people tend to be much more polite than French people, especially in Paris.
No, that's wonderful to hear. Yeah. I guess for me, it's the same thing where I'm coming from the States to the UK, and it's really not that different all in all. I guess for me, I was just wondering because of the language barrier, but I mean, you speak wonderful English, so I don't think it's a problem.
Yeah. Again, I want to warn, I might search for my words. I might make English mistakes, so yeah.
And then just, I guess this is a bit of a weird thing to say, but coming to film program, right, and having a French background, do you find that people might think you're more artistic and talented? That's the impression?
Oh, I don't know, maybe. No, I mean, they obviously tend to ask, questions about what's your, French cinema, what are the French directors you like and everything. So a lot of importance in France. So they tend to ask a lot of questions about that. So definitely, yeah.
The reason why I ask is I was talking to one of my friends before I put this question on, and it's because America's big, right?
Mm.
We got a Tarantino, we got a Michael Bay, we also got a lot of bad directors. So it's such a wide pool. But with French film, I just find that there's never a bad thing to say. At worst, you're obnoxious, but at best, you're groundbreaking.
Right.
So I just feel like you have a bit of an advantage where everyone's like, oh, he probably knows his stuff,
Yeah. So, but that can add a bit of pressure as well, because if you don't know a lot, then you're like,
Yeah. Like I said, you're talented. I like the way you work, so.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
So I guess just starting off nice and early, when you were growing up, did film and or TV specifically play a big role in your life growing up?
Yeah, not enormously. It was mostly comic books. I was reading a lot of comic books, and I guess I was creating some as well, on my own. Drawing was a big part of my childhood, and I think that was kind of a first step into, storyboarding, knowing where to put the characters in the frame and everything. So I think that was kind of my first approach, I guess, images and all that stuff, yeah. But
what comic books specifically?
It was just, funny ones, French funny ones. But I used to read a lot. I used to read a lot of comic books rather than, watch a lot of TV or film.
Okay.
It was just mostly cartoons.
Yeah, because growing up for me, actually, I had a bit of trouble reading. So same, actually, for me, it was comic books were my gateway into that. And I did a lot of Tintin and Asterix, funnily enough.
Asterix, yeah. All right.
And then Lucky Luke.
Lucky Luke, yeah. That's a good one.
You pronounce it much better than I do.
Lucky Luke, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. He had a gun, but it was cool because he was like a kid today,
And exactly. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite comic book?
He was actually so fast, he used to shoot his shadow,
Yes.
That's the thing. Yeah. No, so I grew up with some of those cartoons, yeah.
Do you have a favorite one? This is subject to change too.
Yeah, it's like a variety of one of cartoons I like. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of films would you say you like now, though, genre wise? Like, you more of a horror guy, comedy? You can say everything too.
Okay, so I know what I'm not. I'm not horror.
No.
No.
Why not?
I just it just doesn't interest me. Like, I don't want to get paranoid and stuff. It's not like a sensation I'm looking for. I'm not looking for, you know, I don't want to, like, don't look, I'm not looking to be scared or anything. And it depends what horror film we're talking about. Like, I haven't seen a lot in my life, but I'm wanting to watch a bit more. If they have, like, a, you know, like a subtle message about society or things like that, and I would be interested. But if it's just horror just to be scared, I just don't. That's just not for me.
I think that's fair. I just find that with horror movies, they're kind of going through this rebirth where I think they're a lot, not smarter, but there are a lot more, like with stuff like It Follows, Get Out.
Yes. So It Follows is on my list of films to watch. It might be the next one. And I enjoyed Get Out as well. Yeah, and similarly, like films that, you know, sad films. It just depends on the sensation you're looking for.
Sure. But I just find that with horror films, and I guess this is a little bit, I don't know if you've heard, but I find that production companies seem to like it if you do a horror film because you're working on a smaller budget. Mm. But if it makes its money back, it's kind of like, well, imagine what we can do if we give you a bigger budget. Because I think the guy who directed The Conjuring did Aquaman. That's kind of cool.
It's really cool. And it's true that horror, like the horror genre, that, you know, there's a lot to do. When you're starting, you see a lot of amateur filmmakers starting with horror as well because, you know, it gets a reaction out there and it's fairly easy to do. You can do it on the budget, you know, the Paranormal Activity, kind of like the way they set all that up. That was really, really interesting, you know, in terms of marketing everything. You could do like a lot with not a lot of budget. So that's quite interesting. That kind of like found footage style. That's a really interesting one.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So what other films do you not like? Or I guess,
I'm just not interested in horror films and like dramas that are really, you know, just sad. You know, just talking about illnesses and stuff like that. It's just weird. There's not really a genre. A genre would be horror, but then I'm quite open. It depends on the film, really, what you're looking for as well.
Yeah, I also think labels are quite liberal now. So like something can be like, it could be a thriller, but technically it could also be a comedy. You know, there's a lot of moving pieces to that.
100%.
And I guess, you know, since you are into like, in a directing course, first real directing question is, in your mind, what is a director to you?
Oh, that's a hard question. What is a director to me?
Yeah, to you.
Yeah. It's a hard one to say. A lot of people, actually, a lot of directors have to answer that question. And none of them have like a really great, it's just like a very vague answer. You're just kind of like conducting, you know, this train, you know, this, you have a vision, you have to stick to it, and you're just kind of like the one that's linking all the departments together and just trying to go through with your vision. Once you're on set, it's all about being the leader, I guess, because everyone just turns to you when there's like this decision to make. You can say a lot of things about it, but
here's an analogy. Just give me your opinion on it. Maybe this will help you. So I once heard that the producer is the one who owns the ship, but the director is the one who captains the ship. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. It's true. The producer can also have his saying in some artistic decisions as well.
Because they own the ship.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But he picks a director. He trusts the director. And then it's the director's job to do, you know, the best he can.
Because I'm learning a lot, I guess, just watching people work in the directing role. So from what I gathered, your role essentially is like you are in charge of the day-to-day filming, correct? And like that includes like working with talent.
That's right.
Make sure the set's okay and the camera work a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So you're like a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, that's true. I know like some directors here on the course like to be a bit sometimes hands-on on the camera. I just don't know enough about camera work to actually have a lot of saying. For example, in lighting and everything, I tend to trust, you know, the director of photography with the lighting, unless I have something really specific I want. I tend to trust them with that, direct them a bit more with the camera movement, for example. It just depends on everyone.
No, I think that's a wonderful answer. And I guess this, I got like a two-part for you. So it's like, why did you want to be a director?
Well, yeah, so coming back to that comic book like answer I gave you, like I always like creating, you know, since I was a kid. So it started off with comic books. Creating comic books and stories and you know, just characters, different, you know, little universes, and actually making those stories, you know, follow up, like create magazines where they would each one have a story, and then the next magazine the story would continue.
So you're telling me you did the Avengers before Marvel did the Avengers?
That's right, baby. But yeah, I just like, you know, just creating stories, and that kind of continued, you know, as most of us do when we're like just creating little videos with our, you know, our cousins and like brother and sister and with our little cameras. Creating was always there. I also went through my phase of like creating music on, you know, my laptop. And then I was like, well, I like the visual part of things. I like audio. So might as well just put them together and just go the whole way with film, because that just combinates a lot of just everything. And it's...
Was your undergrad, or what you did before this, yeah, was it also in film, or what was it in?
No, so my undergrad was in advertising. I studied advertising in France for 2 years, advertising, and then I specialized a bit more into marketing. But I wasn't really passionate about advertising. But on parallel to my studies, I was starting to create more like professional films, and that's where I got my experience. It was actually by contacting some friends I knew that were in cinema schools, because I knew I wanted to create film. And during the summer between high school graduation and my first year at university, I created my first like amateur, you know, short film. And after that, you know, I had positive feedback, and so I was like, yeah, I like it, so I might as well take it further and actually film with like real equipment, real actors, and have the whole set. Yeah, in parallel to my studies, that's where I had my experience of like directing for the first time. And after these 3 years, I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. So,
I mean, yeah, just for the record, no judgment on my end. Yeah. I am a film studies with a minor, yeah, in economics, doing radio now.
Right. Yeah. See, everyone just changes. You know, it takes a lot of time to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah. Who knows where, yeah, life takes you, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, it's good. Glad to be here with you now. So
the pleasure's all mine. So I guess my thing is, why not writing if you like to create stories, or why not producing? Like, what was the thing about directing that really was?
That's a good question. So yeah, going back to the comic book situation, the music situation, it's just directing just encapsulates kind of everything. It depends, because when I start, most of my projects I wrote them, I produced them as well, actually. Last week was the first time I directed a film that I hadn't written and I hadn't produced.
Really?
Yeah. Other than that, I was just like hands on a lot of things. And that's what I enjoy about directing, is that you're kind of free to have your vision and go through with it. That's why I wouldn't be just writer or producer, because, you know, the director has a bit more control with the whole, just the entirety of the film.
No, I think that's that's a good reason. Yeah. So essentially, you like having that kind of creative control a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, I like being, you know, hands on. Even though, you know, for the film I did last week, I was always checking out with the writer and the producer if, you know, the little changes I wanted to make were okay with them, and always argumenting like, oh, that would be best for the film. See if they agree or not. And but yeah. Mm.
Do you find that directing is a people's game? Like, you need to be really good with people? Do you think you're good with people, I guess, is what I'm getting at?
I think I am good with people, yes. Yeah. And it definitely helps, because you have to, you know, you have to be in contact with a lot of people, you know. The actors, you know, just everyone. And it facilitates things when you're quite diplomatic as well, and you remain calm and you're able to communicate with everyone and get your point across without being rude or anything. Yeah, it definitely helps.
I think that's the biggest thing. You kind of hit it on the head, is I think you just need to be pleasant and understanding.
Exactly. And our lecturers here, like our teachers, they repeat that often. It's maybe simple advice, but it's important to be nice with people. And,
right?
Nice, respectful. That helps.
So we had you pick three of your favorite directors, with the caveat being that this is subject to change down the line.
Right.
And this was more, I think you said, that they inspire you.
Yes.
So I think we'll go through the list, then we'll go one by one. Does that sound good?
Sure, if you want.
Okay, so the list we have is Xavier Dolan.
That's right.
I'm glad I said that correctly.
Yeah, very well.
Wes Anderson and Christopher Nolan. So let's go back to the top. Xavier Dolan, I'm saying that right?
That's great. That's okay. Great.
So from what I gathered, he's a French-Canadian.
That's right.
Director and actor. It's really embarrassing. So for those of you who don't know, I went to Tommy and I was like, yeah, Xavier Dolan, looked him up. He directed It Chapter 2. And then Tommy was like, no, he was in it, but he didn't direct it.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, that's not his type of film. Yeah. Horror, by the way, so yeah.
Yeah, so like, what do you admire about him?
Yeah, so I picked Xavier Dolan because I came across him when he directed Mummy, his first, like, that was like his most popular film to this day, I think, and it got really popular in France. So I kind of discovered him with that film.
Is the film in French? You have to forgive me, I haven't seen the film.
It's, you know, French-Canadian, so French with an accent kind of thing.
Francophone or whatever.
That's
so between the two, okay.
That's right. And so I discovered that film for the first, like, yeah, back in, that was 2014. And I was kind of, like, it was a really good film. And just, obviously, the thing with Xavier Dolan is that you kind of watch his films knowing that he's the director as well, because it's hard to separate the fact that he's really young as well. Like, he did his first film when he was 19. And ever since then, he's released, like, a film per year, more or less. And all of them are really good. And it's just his maturity and his hard work and his passion. You can see that a lot in interviews, the way he directs his films as well. It's just, yeah, you see a lot of passion in his films, and it's just his hard work and his drive that's quite inspiring. It's mostly his hard work and his passion that I admire.
So you're almost saying that when you see one of his films being made, it seems like he genuinely wanted to just make a film, and the awards are almost secondary. It's almost like he had a passion project and he loves the film.
Yeah.
But he's not just doing it to cash a paycheck.
He says it himself. Like, that's what drives him. It's just making films. He just loves it so much. And I look at a lot of interviews as well, directors' interviews, and it's interesting for me to see how they act, how they talk, how they work and everything. And he specifically is, first of all, he's really talented, but he has a work ethic that's quite impressive as well. And he has really good ideas in terms of, you know, just colouring. He's really good colour palette, you know, clothing. He's really hands-on a lot of things, and his direction of actors is really good as well.
I just recommend a film, because I haven't seen any of his stuff.
Right.
What would you recommend?
I think if you want to, might as well just go straight to Mummy, I think, because it's just his most popular one. So,
and we'll come back to that in a bit. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
All right. So then next on the list, Wes Anderson, someone I do know.
Cool.
The guy who basically, if I had to sum him up, is every movie so pretty.
It is.
I love that. So, like, what draws you to him? Like, why Wes Anderson?
Right. So I picked Wes Anderson because he just found his unique style, and he's just going, you know, 100% with it, and it's just really, it's kind of funny in a way. When I watch his films, I'm kind of like smiling all the time, because I'm like, that is so Wes Anderson. It's just so funny to see how he just sticks to his style, and his style also brings a lot of comedy to the subject as well. I just love how the camera moves, a lot of things. So it's just the way that he found his unique style is just quite impressive. There's not a film that Wes Anderson you'd watch, and if you know Wes Anderson, you'd recognize this film straight away. There are other directors who have, like,
they're like a blank slate almost, right? Like, you wouldn't know that it was made by this director.
A lot of directors have some specific, you know,
style,
film, style, filmmaking, you know, like techniques and everything, but his is just, he takes it to another level, and I just find that quite inspiring as well, to have to find your style and, you know, to go through with it on each film.
Do you have a favorite Wes Anderson film? I think for me personally, it's either going to be Isle of Dogs, or actually a weird one, I love The Life Aquatic.
Right, so when there's a director I really like, I like to watch all of his filmography, and funny enough, I haven't seen yet Life Aquatic and Bottle Rocket. I've seen, so those are like his films I still need
to watch. I haven't seen Bottle Rocket either.
Right, so I'm looking forward to watch Life Aquatic. I like Isle of Dogs as well, but it's hard to pick one. I like Moonrise Kingdom as well. Yeah.
I would say most people would agree with you. Some people say that's his best work, Moonrise Kingdom. I think it's Grand Budapest, personally.
Yeah, it's like, same thing as Mummy, that's his most popular one. And I'm looking forward to watch his new one. I don't know if you've seen the trailer of it.
Oh, French Dispatch?
The French Dispatch, yeah. Same thing. When I watched that, the trailer, I was, you know, just kind of like laughing to myself and just smiling, because it's just, you know, it's just so him.
I turned my head, I was watching it with someone in the room. I was like, this movie's so pretty. Like, you know what I mean? It's gorgeous. Like, and I can't stress that enough. If you haven't seen a Wes Anderson film, the man has an eye just for making rule of thirds and colors. It's just incredible.
It's just great that he's able to do what he does, you know, like to have this whole universe constructed for, like, all the props, all the, you know, the costumes and everything. It's just great.
It's meticulous detail.
I know, I love it.
Before we get to your next person, something I've noticed too is every one of your directors you've picked seems to write and direct their own films. Did you notice that?
Most of them. I don't think,
Christopher Nolan's next,
right. I don't know about Wes Anderson. I think some of them he like co-writes.
Yeah.
Most of them sometimes, yeah, they write and direct as well.
But is that what you envision yourself to do? Would you like to be the director who has like a cool style, but you would want to write your own material, or do you kind of just want someone to slide a script across the table and be like, "This is what I'm doing"?
It depends on the script. It's true, and we might talk about that afterwards. You asked me like, what films do I like?
Yeah,
I like a variety of films, but the films I like to make are usually science fiction or fantasy. Like, they have a little bit of science fiction or a little bit of fantasy in them. Like, I haven't directed a film that hadn't had like a little element of, you know, fantasy or science fiction to them. And so that's why I like to write my stories as well, because I like to tackle these themes and that genre as well. Yeah.
Sure. So I guess Christopher Nolan, I guess arguably speaking, would be the most mainstream on this list. So, I mean, you know, the Batman guy, Interstellar guy, Memento guy. Elaborate. Why do you like
him? So for him, I picked him because for his ambition. Xavier Dolan was, you know, just his young age, but also his passion, you know, his career, like choices and his drive. Wes Anderson was his unique style. Christopher Nolan is just his ambition as well. Similarly to Xavier Dolan, I was interested to see how he started, and just read a lot about his career and everything, about all the choices he has made who got him to this point as well, starting with, you know, following back in, I don't know, it was in the 90s, his first feature film that he'd done for like $6,000. He did that film black and white. He filmed, I think it was every Saturday. He got with the actors, and they rehearsed, they shot the film. So yeah, it's just so after that was Memento. It got him to do Memento. After that, it's just interesting to see like the choices he made and all the opportunities that were offered to him in his career. For me, is one of the films. It's one of the best films I've seen. Is Inception. I just, you know, when I first saw that film, I was like, wow, that's what cinema can do. You know, it's just pure. You know, it's like a blockbuster entertainment, but it's really thought through. It has just this incredible, you know, script, incredible universe. So I was quite blown away when I first saw Inception, and that's why I picked him as a director. His ambition, you know, in the stories he tells, you know, see that with Interstellar. I'm again looking forward for his next film, Tenet.
Which is kind of going back to these Inception roots, kind of this modern sci-fi kind of.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm very looking forward to his new film. So yeah, I picked him for his ambition mostly. Yeah.
What I think about Nolan, which is quite interesting, is he's a versatile. I'm not saying like Wes Anderson isn't or Xavier Dolan isn't, but you notice he can do superhero movies, he can do hard-boiled detective films, sci-fi, and like Dunkirk war film. Mm. It's very impressive.
Yes. And I like his, the slight stress that there is in his films, you know, like there's always like a connection to time, more or less. There's always like this connection to time, and that's something I find quite interesting, you know, the concepts of time, and sometimes it has to do with the past as well, nostalgia. And it's just, he tackles some themes that I quite enjoy myself. Yeah.
Now we're getting to the fun bit, or I guess that was also like another fun bit, is we had you submit your top three favorite films.
Yes.
At the time.
Yeah, I can't remember. Okay,
You gave me a caveat or something that it was just like, I think like these are films that, I don't know, that like you like but can change or something.
Okay.
Yeah, but we'll go through them one by one again. Sound
cool.
Good?
Cool.
All right, so we have Mommy by Xavier Dolan, Inception, Christopher Nolan, and Amelie by Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
That's great. Yeah, that's close enough. Yeah, yeah.
As you can tell, I did 3 years of French in college. It's paying off finally.
Yeah, no, you're doing great. Yeah.
So I guess we'll just dissect them one by one. Cool. So, Mommy, you've spoken about it a little bit. Why do you like this film?
So, Mommy, it's just a film. I don't know if it's cheesy or not to say this, but it's a film I'd consider perfect because I can't see any flaws in it. There's nothing bad I can say about it. That's why I actually, you know, when I'm talking with the other, you know, MA students, it's a film I recommend a lot because of, you know, the cinematography of it, which is beautiful. The artistic choices he has made with you know, the ratio of the film, some moments in the film that are quite memorable, quite beautiful, and the direction of actors is really interesting. I read that he tends to direct his actors. He tends to to speak with the actors as he as they're playing out the scene. He's like playing with them, so it's just really interesting for me to see how like these kind of filmmakers like direct. So yeah, to answer your question, it's a film that has a lot of just a lot of qualities. You know, the story's good, filmmaking is great, actors are great. So I can't find a lot of bad things to say about the film.
I'll definitely check it out.
I think you should.
Yeah, just to give you full disclosure, I come into every movie with an open mind, so I won't come with any biases. So I'm excited to check it out.
Cool. Yeah, you should, definitely.
All right, so we touched upon this one a little bit, but Inception.
Right, Inception. So I hope I didn't answer this before, but it's just Inception is a film that marries, you know, just pure, you know, entertainment, cinema with a big C, basically. It's just like in your face, but at the same time, it has a really detailed story and script, and it just keeps you interested from beginning to end. And I just like also films that create a discussion afterwards. You know, you look at the film, and in this film, it's like, you know, is he in a dream or not? I just found that quite interesting. You know, just the effects it has on pop culture as well. So if a film can sparkle, you know, some discussions between, you know, viewers to like kind of dissect the film and see what it's all about, I find that quite interesting. So yeah, just the story. I really like the story, like the themes in Inception. You know, just again, once again, time that's, you know, just moving forwards. Nostalgia, you know, regret. I like the themes in it as well. Yeah.
I think what's quite brilliant about Inception as well is it's a very hard-hitting concept. Like, what if we could go into a dream but keep going into dreams?
Yeah.
But he somehow made it approachable for anyone to... Like, I could take my dad to this movie who might not like sci-fi and he would enjoy it.
Right.
I think that's also really interesting.
I know a lot of people don't like Inception. Like, similarly to Mummy, I tend to tell my friends, you know, you should watch Inception. So some of them have seen it and didn't like it. The biggest critique people make about, you know, Inception is they kind of like jokingly rewrite the title. Instead of saying Inception, they call it Exposition because the film, you know, is, and fair enough, they explain the plots during the whole, you know, hour or so. What was the comment?
Because the comment was essentially, I just think it's really cool he made a movie that kind of has deep sci-fi kind of themes to
it, but you
could take almost anyone to it.
And I think they would enjoy it. I hope so.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, right. And yeah, so that's why I said I don't think, you know, some people might not enjoy it. Apparently Inception was supposed to be, I don't know if that's true, but when I was, you know, again, reading on Wikipedia about Christopher Nolan, he wanted to make it a horror film at first.
I could see that.
Yeah, because, you know, just like lucid dreaming, there's a lot that can go wrong with it.
And his wife just keeps showing up. That's scary in its own way.
Exactly, yeah. So, no, that's it.
And your final film, Amelie,
yeah.
Thank you for pronouncing that better.
You're doing great.
So this is the film for me that I'm always like, I've seen the poster of everywhere, and I've never seen.
Right, and the poster looks like a horror film, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Right, so Amelie. Yeah, I picked this film. Once again, these are, you know, there's a lot of great films. These are the films I'd often, you know, would recommend to people. And it's a bit of a cliche one because, you know, it won, you know, Academy Award at the time. It's kind of like the French film to watch, but nevertheless, it's a film that I find, you know, quite beautiful. It's just, it's really simplistic. It's a simple film, really simple. That simplicity is actually quite touching for me. It's just, once again, it brings a lot of nostalgia, and that nostalgia is something I'm, you know, have a soft spot for these themes in films. It's just the simplicity of it. Again, the music. That's something we haven't spoken about, but music in film, I think, is really important. I know Christopher Nolan makes good use of music in his
films.
The music in Amelie is really, really touching as well. Yeah, it's one of the films where story's really simple, cinematography is great, and it's just very charming, a charming film, yeah.
Do you think you being French has you have a stronger connection to the film? I'm just curious, because I'll probably watch it at some point.
Probably, but once again, when you speak about this film, it's kind of like a cliche film, the French things that you see in the film.
Well, like there's cheese and red wine, and baguettes, elaborate.
Yeah, people must say it's cheesy and everything, but I just find it, yeah, just quite charming about, yeah. The question was, do I relate to it even more because I'm French?
Yeah.
Probably because, you know, there's just some artists they speak about in the film, some locations I've been to and everything that I recognize, and it's kind of like showing a France from the past, so maybe I can.
Hence the nostalgia. Yeah. So I think we painted a good picture of who Tommy Tessier is, you know, the art that you like, what motivates you, the directors you like, all that fun stuff.
Hmm.
So I guess now we're going to go to the nitty-gritty of your role as a director in a student in a university. What is the director's main role on set? We've touched upon this a little bit, maybe elaborate now that we've spoken a bit more about directors. And
Right. So, yeah, the question is on set, right?
On set. You are on a film right now.
Can I talk a little bit about before set?
Yes.
Cool. So to me, it's mainly, so there's these two parts, you know, there's before the set and on set, and before is just a lot of planning. It has to do, yeah, a lot of preparation. I think that the more you prepare, the best you'll be on set. And I hate going on set without being prepared. So that's why I spend a lot of time, you know, just on my computer, just, you know, preparing shot lists, you know, doing a floor plan to show where the camera is, what's happening when. And I tend to over prepare a bit, I guess, and just share it with, you know, the crew to see, like, so everyone's on the same page. That's important for me. So it's important, yeah, just to prepare, see the locations, know what you're about to shoot. And once you're on set, then things can run really smoothly. On these two, like, on most of my projects, I've done that, and I didn't have a lot of problems, and I didn't have a lot of, you know, just discussions on the day on, like, oh, we should put the camera here, oh no, oh, we should do this, that happened only on one of my first shoots, because I couldn't go and see one of the locations. But once you prepare, you know how the location is, you know, you see the space, you know where the windows are, where everything is, and you know where to put the camera, then it's just a matter of, you know, just doing it. And that's when, you know, when we speak about it with the other people from the course, it's basically that, it's once you've there's only so much you can do in preparation, and once you've done that, when you're on set, you can't do much more about it. It's just, you know, you just have to go with the plan, and if you prepared well, you can, like, adjust the plan. If there are things that don't go well, you could have, like, a plan B. So once you're on set, it's just about, just doing the shots you prepared for, and adapt if you have to, and communicate with everyone, of the actors, with the cinematographers. Just be aware that everyone's communicating with each other. I know that's not necessarily the director's role, but I just want everyone to communicate with each other, to just know that everyone knows what to do and what to do next and how to anticipate, because my biggest problem on set all the time is time. And just for everyone, I guess, it's just we never have enough time, and sometimes we don't have enough time to do the shots we want or to repeat them, and etc. So being efficient on set is just to communicate efficiently with everyone and to anticipate, you know, what's the next thing we're going to do. And that saves time. And if it saves time, it makes us get the shots we want.
Yeah, no, I mean, time is money, right?
That's right.
So that was the pre-work, the pre-production, if you will. So let's say we're on production. What is your role?
On set.
On set.
Okay. So once you're on set, you go to the first location. You got your shot list. You know what's the first shot. You let the cinematographer know, you know, what is the first shot. You rehearse with the actors. You know, like, you block the scene. You block the scene with the actors. You show them, you know, this is the scene we're doing. They rehearse it with you for 10 minutes. Then you show that scene to the rest of the crew, so that everyone knows where the actors are, where they move. Then everyone has the information, so, you know, okay, this is happening, cool. The actors can go and do their hair and makeup, whilst you go and talk with your cinematographer on, you know, the camera movement and the lighting, if you want. And whilst they set up the camera and everything, the actors are getting prepared, so you don't waste time. Once all that is done, everyone comes back on set to shoot do the first shot. And you have a certain amount of time to get that shot right. So hopefully you can do, like, a little rehearsal before. The best thing is to do a recorded rehearsal with the people. You've seen that on the sets. You know, we were together on set.
For those of you who don't know, recorded rehearsal means we're going to say it's a rehearsal, but if it's good enough, we'll use it.
That's right. It takes a bit of pressure off the actors to say it's a recorded rehearsal when actually it's a take.
I mean, but it's in the name. It's just recorded. Like, there's a difference between rehearsal and then recorded rehearsal. But I see how it works. I really do.
That's right. So once you've done the recorded rehearsal, you adjust, you know, the performance or the camera work or whatever needs to be adjusted. once again, you don't have a lot of time to get that shot. So try and do the best you can.
Yeah.
That's important also to just to communicate with whoever needs to make, you know, the changes in the performance or in the camera work or whatever. And then it's just a matter of just repeating the process. You go to the next shot, you let the actors know what it is, let the camera team know what it is, go back on set and do it. Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful explanation. Thank you.
Sure. No worries.
And then in post, do you work with the editor at all?
Yes. And yeah, I work really closely actually with the editor. I like to be in the studio, the room.
The editing suite is
exactly.
The technical term.
Right, in the editing suite with the editor. So yeah, when I write the films, when I come up with the shot list, I tend to have quite a clear vision of how it's going to be edited. I don't know if that's like a bad thing or a good thing. I spoke with one of the other directors. He sees it more as, you know, not a bad thing, but, you know, he says, you know, you should be a bit more free with, you know, how you want things to go. But I tend to have quite a clear vision of how it's going to be edited. It's already edited in my head when I come up with the shot list. And so I tend to let the editor know more or less how I want it. Obviously, this is a specific thing because we have our own version to submit here at uni. So it has to be as we want it, more or less. And then the editors have their version to submit as well. So that's why I tend to be quite hands-on.
Does the producer get your cut, or do they have their own producer cut?
Right. So I'm not sure because, again, this is like quite recent. We've only shot the film, you know, last week. I don't think they have their cut for... This is only at uni, right? In the real world, you know, it's different. But for here, where there's only two cuts. There's a director's cut and the editor's cut. And the producer, they get their grades on their work as a producer beforehand. They don't get a grade on the film per se. It's more on their work as a producer.
And moving on, you were kind of cute with this. People like the curtain a little bit. I did ask, you know, do these directors influence you on set? To which you responded, yes, Dolan and Nolan have influenced how I am on set. First of all, were you trying to be cute and like make a joke, or did it just work out that way?
It kind of worked out that way, but at the same time, this is just something, I don't know, there's no one from France is going to be listening, but, well, maybe actually Camille, but what? In France, there's this, like, there's this news channel called Combini, this online news channel, and they tend to ask questions to, you know, celebrities in a very fast fashion and put, you know, two things together, and they usually put, do you prefer Dolan or Nolan, you know? Oh. It's just a funny thing they say, and yeah, it works out that way because I picked those ones, yeah.
No, I really liked it, but, like, do they influence how you are on set?
They do in a way because that's just me. I just like to watch a lot of behind the scenes, you know, on YouTube and just to see how directors, you know, how they are. I like to read about how they direct, you know, just little things they do. I know, as I told you before, I know that Xavier Dolan, he tends to interact a lot with his actors on set. So that's, when you see directors do things like that, it kind of allows you to do, like, you're like, okay, he does that. I could probably do the same thing. Like, it's reassuring in a way to see how others do things, especially when you start off with, like, when I before doing my ever first project, I was quite curious to see how things were done. So it's interesting to see how directors direct. I know Xavier Dolan does that. It's interesting for me to see how he works. Just recently for one of our dissertations to give in, I actually wrote mine on Mummy. I saw that in the pre-production phase, Xavier Dolan liked to print out, you know, very big documents about a lot of influences, you know, costume influences, colors, whatever. And so that's something I tried to do myself for the semester two films, you know, just have like a really big document with a lot of influences, you know, just from Instagram pictures I liked, just who could fit in the mood of the film I wanted to do. That's how he influences me. Christopher Nolan, similarly, it's just like little things he does. I know that it may sound a bit silly, but he wears shirts when he's on set. He dresses casual smart. And talking with another director from our course, he also likes to wear shirts when he directs because it just makes you, I guess, move differently. It makes you, you know, just... It gives like a professional like vibe to how you direct as well. It's a bit weird to say it like that, but yeah, Christopher Nolan likes to, I know he he asks his crew to dress, you know, casual, smartish, like as if they were going to work. And I just like to read about how other directors, you know, direct, or like little rules they have. You know, I know Quentin Tarantino likes to, he doesn't like phones on set. There's no phones on set. So it's just, yeah, interesting to see what they do and how that influences the way they work on set and, yeah, the whole experience of being on set.
No, that's awesome. And do you, I guess when you're on set, do you like have trouble being like really assertive and like on it, or are you more of like the nice guy? How do you approach like your you know, your crew, your talent? What's your strategy?
Oh, that's a very interesting question.
Or does it change based on crew? Also possible.
It doesn't change a lot. The thing is, the people who I work with in pre-production, I try to be quite, I try to make a lot of, you know, research and a lot of written work, you know, like, as I said, just make a lot of detailed notes about, you know, the shot list. And actually, you know, on this previous production, the producer and the writer were kind of like making a little joke out of it, because I tend to come up in the meetings with a lot of notes on everything. So yeah, in that sense, I tend to work.
So you're always prepared.
Always prepared. That's quite impressive. Some people might like to work, be a bit more, have a bit more improvisation in how they do things. I like to be prepared, because otherwise, yeah, it's just to save time, but also I need to have like a clear vision of how things are going to run.
I spoke to one of your screenwriters and she made the same comment. She was like, Tommy is always asking for safety shots. Even though the take's beautiful, he keeps wanting another one because he's so prepared. I think that's a compliment. So good for you.
Cool.
What projects have you worked in Bournemouth so far? This is film school. You're in the film program. Mm. How many films have you made?
I did the first semester one film, semester two film. Then, you know, there's the master's project. I worked as a first assistant director on three films, I think. And that was really, actually, I enjoyed that a lot. Even though it's quite stressful to be always looking at time and, you know, asking people, you know, can you silence, please? Can you get a move on? Can you do this, that? It was actually quite interesting. I enjoyed it. And obviously, helping as an actor or an extra on sets.
So let's talk about your most recent film very quickly. Fated. You want to tell me what that's about?
Right. So Fated.
SEM2 film. Sorry, just SEM2 film. Just finished, what, last week?
That's right.
Very cool.
That's right. Fated, yes. So Fated is set in a society, not necessarily too futuristic or not, but a society where people receive letters about how and when they are going to die. And the film follows a family where in that family they receive a letter for the son, you know, the son, the 12-year-old son, you know, saying basically how and when he's going to die. And the parents receive the letter, the kid doesn't know about it. And basically the question is, are they going to read the letter or not? I'm not going to spoil the film or anything, but basically the mother decides to read it, and it's all about, okay, we as an audience, that we don't see what's on the letter, we don't know what's going on. And the whole film is kind of like trying to figure out, why is she changing? Because she's changing her behavior and everything up to a certain point where there's like a twist at the end. Yes.
It sounds like right up your alley. Sci-fi, a little dark, a little like, I don't know, future. So was that what drew you to the project, or did you work with the project before, or did the screenwriter just approach you?
What happened is, in November, all the producers and the writers had to pitch their film to the rest of the framework. And after that, the directors and just, you know, editors, everyone could approach the producers to say, you know, I'm interested in your film, this is why, blah blah blah. That went on for like a week or two, and then the teams had to be, you know, complete. And when I heard the pitch for Fated, because, you know, it was the producer's idea, Josie, and Hannah wrote the script, when they pitched the story, I obviously was quite attracted to it, as you said, because it tackles slight science fiction. And it's just really has like this thriller vibe about it. And basically when I went back home, I sent them this message explaining why I was interested in it, blah, blah, blah. Talking about Christopher Nolan again, because in the pitch, there's like this moment where at the end, the film is, there's like this intersection between three different moments, and the tension kind of builds up around these three different scenes. And that's something Christopher Nolan does in his films, is like at some point there's like three different scenes that like intersect and building up to a, like a point. As I was just explaining to them why I was interested in the film, and I approached them, and basically the film was fantasy because it had to do with, you know, just destiny, and there wasn't really a backstory to the letters. And when I came into the meeting with them for the first time, I explained to them that I would prefer it to be science fiction, because I'd find that a bit more interesting if there were, if that could be real, and if it could be grounded into reality a bit more, and it would add up to the tension as well. Because if it's just destiny playing against the characters, it's a bit of an unfair battle as well, so that creates a bit more suspense to it. And so the backstory of the letters were, you know, it's like a company giving out these letters to random people to kind of like promote their services, which is basically they're analyzing data, and with all the data they recollect, they're able to accurately, or you know, kind of like predict future behaviors, because that is already kind of happening with, you know, ads on Google, Facebook. You know, we collect a lot of data, and with that data they're able to say what you're interested in, etc. And it's basically saying how far can data go, and in this case it's going as far as, you know, death. And I found that quite interesting, so I put this idea forward, they were interested in it, and yeah, we went on after that. Yeah,
I mean, I'm really interested. When can we see it? When will it be out?
So we're starting to edit in 2 days with Sam. We're going to edit the film. We have, I think, a week, like 2 weeks, I think, until the you know, the editing cut. Then we'll have like a month or so to work on sound design with Andre. And after that, the film should be ready. So in about maybe a month and a half, 2 months, maybe.
Yeah. Very exciting. And the film we will see, will that be like the Tommy cut, or will that be the editor cut?
That's a good question. Because I'll do my cut first, so I'll know how that looks. We'll see what the editor will do with, you know, his cut. And whatever's best is probably what Josie, the producer, will use to put into festivals, because she has the rights to the films, and it will be interested to see if it can go into festivals as well. Yeah,
sure. And final question is, what have you learned so far throughout this whole process of making, you made what, 2 films now?
That's right.
Volunteered for maybe 4 or 3.
Yeah.
What have you learned?
That's right. Yeah, I've done 2 films here. I've done like maybe two music videos and like a short film as well. And throughout that time, that's a quite hard question that I'd also, you know, it's quite a vast one as well. Learning how to, in terms of filmmaking, obviously just as time goes by, as you're on set, you learn a lot about how to interact with people, how to interact with your cinematographer. That's quite an important part of the job also, because you're both like kind of like creating what's seen on screen, with communicating with every department. So it's mostly learning how to interact with people on set. And also I learned how, actually that is something that I've kind of like learnt as I was on set during my time in Bournemouth specifically, is I learned a bit more about like framing and about lenses. And that is actually something I wanted to learn a bit more about, because the technical aspect of things is something I'm still lacking. I need to learn a bit more about that. And so yeah, being on set and seeing, you know, in the monitor, the framing, and hearing, oh, what lens is used for this shot, that made me see a bit more, okay, so this lens, it looks like that on screen. And it allowed me to point out a bit more accurately what lens I would like to use in my semester 2 film. So that was a good thing. But yeah, just learning a lot.
Sure. I think the biggest takeaway for me from talking to you, just be nice.
Yes, exactly. Being nice. So I think, yeah, it's really important to be diplomatic as well. Just to, you know, especially because I worked as an AD, as first assistant director, and that's, it's supposed to be like the bad cop. You know, there's like the good cop being the director, and First Lady is considered the bad cop because he's the one who's supposed to you know, kind of like make people respect, you know, the set and respect this, that, the time and everything. And yeah, it's doing that in a respectful manner is always it's always a good thing.
And Tommy, if the fans want to find you, do you have an Instagram, Twitter, email, website that you want to throw out there?
Yeah, actually, I need to create myself a website. That's something quite important to do. So that's also something I'd recommend. You know,
okay.
Filmmakers, but you know, cinematographers also to just create a website. I'm planning on doing one soon. So if the podcast were in a few months, maybe I'd have this website to give you. For now, my work can be seen, you know, I have a YouTube channel, whatever, but it's mostly on Instagram that you can follow, you know.
We'll link you in the bio.
So it's Tommy Tessier, TommyTessier, Tommy Tessier on Instagram. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for being on the show. Really
appreciate
it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, I liked it.
That concludes this episode of Director's Cut. Thanks to Tommy Tessier for being the first guest on the show. If you enjoy this type of content, please check out first.co.uk.